Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, welcome back once again. We're giving it another go since yesterday's show kind of fell apart, but we've got it back together here, and Blog Talk seems to be doing just fine. I appreciate everybody that was sending me different type of links to look into so we can move the show somewhere else, since, you know, we've been having some difficulties for quite some time with Blog Talk, but we're doing it again. It's a noon show, and I hope everybody's on their lunch tuning in. We got a great weekend of fights. We got two guests that are going to be coming on. I'm going to be calling in both of the guests so that we can have them on here on Leaving the Ring. Juan Carlos Mini is going to be right now at this moment as we're speaking. I believe they're going to start weighing in. So as soon as he's off of the weigh-in, he does all his paperwork and signs into the bout, we'll have him on for a short bit and get his take about his exciting upcoming fight with the Puerto Rican Rocky Martinez. I got my co-host, Mr. Gable Montoya. This is your host, Dave Duenas. Mr. David Chan is not joining us today because I didn't let him know about this here. But fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. We have the prospect heavyweight that's going to be coming on in about 2 or 3 minutes, Dominic Brazil, who's starting to make a bit of noise. In the boxing community. Not a whole lot. Not a lot of people know about him, but if you follow the Olympics and you follow the heavyweight American prospects, you definitely are aware of his presence.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's way too young for him to for anybody to be going crazy about Dominic Brazil just yet. You know, he's developing. We're kind of seeing him at the pro game. You know, we'll see how he goes, but I'm curious to see what he has to say and kind of get to know him, because I imagine, you know, who he's aligned with and everything, he's going to be seen more. And so, you know, we're going to have to know about him. So I'm excited to get to know him. I haven't talked to him yet. I don't know much about him. So I'm curious to find out. I'm really excited about our other guest as well, JC Burgos. That's a fight I'm just really looking forward to.
I am too. You know, and going with Dominic, who's considered more of a super heavyweight, you know, and it's been some time of talks that they should start another category, which I that's an argument there that can be debatable. You know, you do have your smaller heavyweights that are between 5'11 or even 5'10 to 6'3 and from 205 to 220. And then you got these massive men that are walking around at 6'5 and up to 6'9, you know. And they're carrying a significant amount of weight between 240 to 250, and a lot of it's not even fat. It's a lot of heavy muscle. But he's definitely in that category of the super heavyweight. And, you know, I guess the big question that lingers around him is starting late in the game, you know, it's starting to become that common trend, you know, from football player or basketball player turning into boxer. Is he rushed in a certain way, the way Seth Mitchell was rushed into his contingency of trying to go after the title, and he fell short by facing a veteran and not over the hill fighter like Jonathan Banks, or is he tracked along the proper way? Build him up, allow him to grow. Dante Wilder, I know there's a lot of criticism about him, but in a lot of ways, I think that Golden Boy has been doing a bit right by him by allowing him to grow and learn a little bit more, because here was a guy that was one of a million even to make it and get a bronze medal, you know, and the guy who didn't have a major amateur background, and he's been learning on the job. So I like how they're maneuvering him. I'm wondering if they're going to do the same thing with Dominic.
We'll see. You know, I think we're just going to see them, you know, quite often. I mean, you know, on the Showtime connection with Heyman, I think he's going to be kind of added in there. The thing about Brazil that gets me is that nothing really sticks out yet.
Right.
You know, you don't go, wow, ferocious puncher, amazing balance, you know, or, you know, all these different attributes. You haven't really been blown away. He's not, he's just kind of middle of the road. He's a solid boxer. He's got good fundamentals. But I don't know what stands out yet. He doesn't seem particularly fast. I don't know if it's intelligence, although he seems to be, he kind of looks like an intelligent guy. You know, I've seen him speak and everything. I've seen interviews and stuff. He's well-spoken. And that ultimately might be it. I always think intelligence is a really underrated attribute for a fighter. We always look at the flashy things. But look at a Bernard Hopkins or a Floyd Mayweather, guys that are able to slow the game down, not just by, you know, I think it's intelligence, it's confidence in what they do, it's technique. You know, but I think it's also like sheer force of will and personality. People get in with Hopkins and they get in with Floyd and they kind of balk because they don't know what they're going to do. And I think that speaks to their intelligence. So I'm curious with Dominic Brazil. You know, we're going to see. How far out are we from
we're going to call him right now. We had him scheduled between 12 and 12:30 because he goes in his training camp about a little after 12:30. So we should be able to get him on right now. I did let his wait a minute. That's not right. I don't know why they did that. but let me call him in right now. And we should be able to get a lot of the curiosity out of the way and find out a little bit more about him and what he's all about. Let me there we go. That's the problem. Some reason it was sticking to the UK, and it's not the UK. So here we go. Now we got this rolling here for us. Block Talk's always changing something on us, man. And so we should be making up for yesterday. These were the guests that were scheduled for the show, and we weren't able to get them on. But here we go. Let's get Dominic Brazil here with us on Leaving the Ring Radio. And then we're going to get down to our predictions of this weekend's fights, as well as our fight schedule.
Hello?
Yes, can we speak to Dominic?
This is him. This is Dominic.
Hey, Dominic, how you doing, brother? This is Dave Duenas with Leaving the Ring Radio with my co-host Gabriel Montoya from Max Boxing and Leaving the Ring. How you doing?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
We're doing good, man. I apologize for yesterday. We had some difficulties. We weren't able to get you in, but we're here now on our noon show. So you're in training camp right now. That's what I'm being told. You're going to be going into the gym. How's that working out for you? And what is in line and stored for you next?
You know, camp's always good. You know, just staying busy. I'm actually heading up to Powerhouse Gym, home of Malik Scott, doing some sparring work with him this afternoon. About 12:30 or so. But my next fight date is March 2nd, I believe. It's going to be here on the West Coast. I haven't got a location yet, but I've got a date set. So, in the works, you know, always just staying busy.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Dominic, because, you know, when we talk to a lot of the fans and, you know, we go across some casual fans, and that's always one of the questions that's always raised is, when are we going to have another American heavyweight? So give us a little bit about your background so the audience can understand a little bit more about you and get more of a feel where you come from.
Yeah, definitely. A little about my background. I'm Southern California, born and raised, Pasadena area, San Gabriel Valley. You know, boxing didn't come upon my life until about 4.5 years ago. Prior to that, I was always doing football and basketball. You know, I played college football at the University of Northern Colorado. And, you know, I did, like I said, football and basketball in the state of California, all over the place. But boxing came along, you know, in 08, June of 08, actually. You know, it was a window of opportunity, and I took it. And, I'm, you know, I'm learning boxing day by day, step by step. And I'm learning every day, you know, even as a professional right now with three wins under my belt. You know, I had a great amateur career. You know, successful as an amateur, went ahead and got myself an Olympic spot on the Olympic team this last 2012 games. So boxing has been good to me.
Let me ask, how was the transition? I mean, because we're starting to hear this a little bit more, where we hear football players that went to college and then they decided, you know what, I'm going to be a fighter. Put some gloves on. Seth Mitchell is by far one of the more recognizable stories of doing so. How has that transition been doing for you? And is this a bit of a catch up in terms of trying to catch up to these guys that have been seasoned, these guys that have been doing it since their early age?
You know, at first it was a bit of a catch up. It was kind of a hard transition from football into boxing. You know, every aspect of it, from, you know, the conditioning to the being in the gym every day. I think the biggest part of boxing is there's no off season. You know, boxing is more of a lifestyle rather than a sport. Whereas in football, you know, you're on 4 or 5 months or whatnot, and you've got some time off. So that aspect of boxing was a little bit of a change, but. You know, as I got into my 2-year mark, things started becoming easier and easier. And now it just kind of feels like it's natural. It's almost like it's second nature. I do learn things every day in the gym, but it's almost like I'm fine-tuning now. I feel like I've hit that point where experience is the only thing that is the negative and the positive of my boxing game. There's things I learn, there's things I lose, there's bad habits that I break on a daily basis. So the transition that helped the most from football to boxing was the leadership skills and just the commitment to being in the ring. With, you know, my biggest game football to boxing.
I like how you mentioned that boxing is a lifestyle. You know, we've spoken to so many different fighters and trainers, and one of the favorite sayings of guys, they always say, you know, there's no part time in boxing. You got to be full time into it. How are you able to make sure you're full time into this sport for the dedication part?
You just got to take it upon yourself, you know. From, you know, waking up in the morning, 6 a.m. doing road work every day, 6 days a week, to strength conditioning that I do in the afternoon, and then keeping myself occupied in the gym. If I'm not in the gym in the afternoon, sparring Monday, Wednesday, Friday, sometimes even Saturdays, I'm definitely in the gym doing technical work on Tuesday, Thursday evenings or whatnot. So just keeping your mind on the game. You know, staying busy and just staying involved in it, whether it's going to boxing shows or just being around, you know, the amateur boxing circuit, just to watch fighting. You know, before I was watching football on Sundays and Saturdays and things like that. Now I'm watching football. You know, I mean, I'm watching boxing every night. Every time I get a chance, I'm recording Friday night fights. I'm getting HBO shows. So
right.
My big thing is I love to watch old school boxing, you know, the Riddick Bowes, the Holyfields, you know, Pernell Whitakers, things like that. So whenever that stuff gets shown on cable, I definitely record it and I watch it and I study it on a daily basis.
I'm going to pass it over to my co-host, Gabriel. Go for it, brother.
Welcome to the show, Dominic. It's a pleasure to have you on. I've had a chance to watch you fight live, and it's nice to get to finally talk to you and find out things about you. For you, what are the similarities between football and boxing? Are there any?
Other than, you know, that hard nosed tough guy type of deal, not really. I mean, I played quarterback in football, so my transition was a little bit different than some guys that, you know, transition from linebackers or defensive line, things like that, where they're getting contact on a daily basis. Definitely the smarts and the smarts from the quarterback position and the way I carry myself, you know, as a quarterback on the field, transition into the ring as a fighter, definitely.
You know, one of the things we've been talking about the last few days, we were talking with Tyson Fury and talking to Henry Ramirez, the trainer of Chris Areola, is that there are certain things that, because those guys learned how to fight when they were smaller, you know, when they were kids and then they grew into heavyweights, there's a big difference between those guys and the guys like yourself that were heavyweights that then started to learn how to fight. Do you think that it's possible to catch up? I understand that, like, you've kind of... taking the film study of football and now taking it over to football, or rather that you had it in football and you switched over to boxing, and you've become kind of obsessed with the job, which is what you should do. But do you think you can catch up? There's a certain relaxation and a flexibility that a guy like Malik Scott is going to have that, say, you know, other football players turned boxers don't end up with, like a Seth Mitchell. What are your thoughts about that? I mean, obviously that's the goal, is to catch up. Do you see certain things? go ahead.
Yeah, definitely. Like you said, the goal is definitely to catch up, and I'm glad I've got that, you know, that great skill of watching video and film review and things like that, because that's a big, huge point in my game. I mean, like I said, I watch film every day, but catching up to the guys, you know, veterans like Ariola's, the Malik Scott's, even the Klitschko's, guys like that, they've been around it for, you know, a ton of years of their lives. It's already consumed. Boxing is part of their life. And now that I've only been doing it 4.5, 5 years now, I feel like I've got an experience, but, that, you know, I'm gaining experience every time I step in the ring, every time I show up to the gym. But there's habits that are formed as a fighter, and me being young in the game, I'm forming great habits and learning new habits every day. And I'm not having to go back and change things. I'm working with a great trainer, John Bray, who's worked with some world-renowned fighters. And, you know, he's done a great job transitioning from an amateur into a pro. You know, we're definitely punching a lot harder. We're punching with authority and, you know, very aggressive boxing type of style fighter. But the guys that you know, started boxing when they were young and continue to box now and are doing great as successful heavyweight pros, they're always going to have a little bit of an edge as far as experience and things like that. But I think as long as I get the rounds in and sparring, you know, right now I'm sparring some of the best guys in the heavyweight division. And I'm actually heading up to the gym right now to spar Malik Scott to get him ready for his next fight. So for me to be in the ring, you know, 4.5, 5 years as a boxing athlete, and Malik to be in his 12th, 13th year and be able to spar with him, you know, it's just basically an honor.
Malik Scott, have you worked with him yet, or is this your first time?
No, I've worked with him a couple different times, actually.
Okay.
He sparred Wednesday, and then I got, you know, helped him out for his last fight back in September, so... I've got some rounds under my belt with Malik.
That's you can't get really much better sparring than that, except for maybe the Klitschko's or getting in with like a guy like Wilder, who's kind of young and up and coming. But Malik is as elusive and he's a slick guy, a real solid technician too, knows how to fight. When you're looking at film, that's something that I'm really curious about, because as a football player, you're looking for tendencies. Imagine you're looking all over a guy's body to see where, you know, how he moves, where he's moving. What do you look for when you're watching boxing? And of all the things that you've watched, what has struck you the most? Who's been most impressive to you in your studies?
You know, there's a ton of boxers out there. You know, I primarily try to watch the heavyweight game. Like I said, a lot of the old school guys like Derrick Bowes and Lennox Lewis and guys like that, you know, that really created the game. And when heavyweight boxing was heavyweight boxing, you know, I learned from them, you know, the pushing, the shoving, to be the big, strong, aggressive guy in the ring. But, I mean, a great person to learn from that I've learned hands-on with is Malik Scott. I mean, he does some things that most heavyweights can't even dream of doing. Like you say, he's slick. He's got great defense. He does things technically sound. One that I love to watch, and sometimes I try his moves, and I know I can't do it, but is Pernell Whitaker. Pernell Whitaker is just one of the greatest fighters I can ever watch on film.
Yeah, he is.
But you know, for a heavyweight to be doing some of the things that Pernell Whitaker did is you know, is unheard of. But if I can pull off one or two of his moves on a daily basis,
right,
that'd be great, you know? Well, at
your size, like, I was talking to Mark Breland, who has Deontay Wilder, and he's like, you know, when you're 6'8", 6'6", you don't really need to be bobbing and weaving, you know, you don't need to be shoulder rolling, you know, it can be kind of simple, you know, a 1-2 defense or a 1-2 offense, maybe with you throw a hook in there or an uppercut, the punches can be basic. I mean, the game is different because you guys are so big nowadays. I mean, you look at those old school heavyweights, you know, Marciano was like, what, 185? Joe Lewis was around the same weight.
Right, well, 190.
Yeah,
right.
It was a different type of fighting. Do you study the Klitschko's?
I do. You know, the Klitschko's and me, they do great things, and they're great at what they do technically. But there's only so many fights that you can watch of it. It's pretty much the same thing over and over.
Right.
But they do it so good, and they've perfected the art that they do as a boxing style.
At the same time, though, when you watch them, let me ask you this, Dominic, you know, and you see that they do it over again and again and again, does it amaze you that nobody's been able to for a large amount of years, been able to penetrate through that, you know, same repeat of style that they pose?
You know, not really. When I first started watching them, and I, you know, maybe 2 years ago, if you had asked me that question, I would have told you that the Klitschko's are nothing. But now that I've learned the boxing game and I know what they're doing and their boxing scheme, I, like I said, they've perfected what they do best, and they're doing a great job. They've had the belts for 5-6 years now, and they're probably going to continue to have the belts probably for the next following year or until they give me a shot.
Your ring experience, you know, obviously for pros, you've only been in there for 5 rounds, you know, 3 fights, and they've been knockouts. And you mentioned Riddick Bowe, which was a big guy, but used a lot of combinations. That was one thing that I think that made Riddick, separated Riddick from the big guys, is how he used the combinations. He went from the body to the head, to the head to the body, and he created openings in the inside. Is that an influence of how you want to mimic yourself? Because, I mean, it's really hard to tell such in so early in your career, but is that what you look at? Is that what you're looking at as how the Americans kind of broke into the scene with the bigger men like Riddick Bowe?
Yeah, definitely. You know, changing levels is a huge, I think, is a huge gain for a heavyweight boxer or any type of boxing style. If you can, you know, throw a combination of the head and continue it up and follow it up with a combination of the body, you're going to do some damage in a fight. Nevertheless, as a heavyweight, you know, every time we land a shot, it's effective. So if I'm hitting you downstairs, and
did we lose him?
No, he's still on the line with us. Dominic, are you still there, brother? Hello?
It shows that he's still with us.
Let me call him back. I just hung up. So he did show that he was still with us. So he might have lost reception. We have Dominic Brazil with us here. All right, we lost you for a moment, brother.
Yeah, we lost you for a second there.
But go ahead. You were saying about, you know, going up.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I've sculpted myself to be, you know, almost a mirror image of a guy like Riddick Bowe, you know, changing levels, throwing body shots and continuing up top and finishing my combination up top upstairs. You know, I want to be a guy that's got a strong jab. I want to be known for a guy that's got a strong jab. I want to be known that every punch that, you know, Dominic Brazil lands, it's very strong and it's effective. I should be in the heavyweight game. You know, we're heavyweights, and every time we land a shot, it should be effective. It should be one of those shots that your opponent says, you know what, I'm not going to last very long in this, you know, this fight. This is going to get stopped early. But we practice on a daily basis of throwing, you know, whether we start upstairs or we start downstairs on the potty, we're always finishing on a different level. So
is it important to you, too? You fought 3 times in SoCal, and you're a SoCal guy. Is it important for you to develop your following here? Have you guys talked about that as you kind of develop promotionally, or right now are you just worried about getting fights, getting experience?
Yeah, right now I'm just kind of worried about getting fights, getting experience. I'm just getting those rings, you know, those rounds under my belt, and continue to be successful. You know, my management, Al Heyman, is doing great right now. He's keeping me busy, and you know, I like to fight on it. You know, every 3 weeks or so, definitely every month. So just staying busy is one of my key goals.
That's going to be the hardest thing anyways with a heavyweight, because there's only so many big people out there, and they're quality big men, you know. There's a lot of probably, you know, fat businessmen that you could beat up, or older guys, you know, but getting you that guy that's actually going to teach you something, you know.
Yeah.
You can, you know, you get those early knockouts, that's great, it's exciting, but you need rounds, you know, and you need a guy to, like, push you back a little bit and test you. Wouldn't you agree? Especially at age 27, I mean, you know, time is of the essence.
Yeah, definitely. You know, being in the ring with you know, every shape, every size, every age, every angle type of deal. You know, that way you get the experience that you need. I truly think the rounds are definitely the way to get experience. You know, whether right now, you know, I'm getting my rounds in through sparring with, you know, some great guys. You know, hopefully my pro career just starts to take off like crazy. We're hoping that this next March 2nd fight is definitely a 6-round fight. And, you know, I don't want, like you say, I don't want to be fighting that businessman. I want to be fighting, you know, someone that's got some recognition and definitely been around the game.
Man, that's really good to hear. You know, and Gable kind of took the question that I was kind of gearing for, was about being over there in SoCal. And I guess the only last question I would have for you before we let you go is, you know, Do you tell your manager, do you tell Al Heyman, he has one of the most exciting heavyweights out there, like Chris the Nightmare, do you tell him, hey, I need to get my work in with guys like this that have been in there, that have had the experience in fighting other good heavyweights? Do you ask him to ship me around so that I can catch up with these guys and experience what their experience level, and I can feed off of what they can educate me with.
Oh yeah, definitely. They've you know, we've expressed to each other that's the way to get to the top. You know, the only way you can be the best is to fight the best as well as, you know, train and practice with the best. So we're definitely on the same common ground in that area for sure.
Well, I'm really excited, man, to see your career fold, and you know, that's why we wanted to get you on here on Leaving the Ring and speak to us, and for our listeners can have a chance to hear an American heavyweight that's coming up, and you know, we root for you, brother. We really do.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Dominic. Thank you very much.
All right, bye.
Heavyweight Dominic Brazil with us on Leaving the Ring, and you know,
I was muted, going, "Yeah, thanks, man. It was really great to meet you." And I was down, flashing button. Damn it!
You know, I know some folks are going to be like, "It's a little early to even really know anything or even have an opinion about him." But that's why we wanted to have him on, because we've done that. You know, when Dante Wilder came out of the Olympics, we had him on right away, and we had a chance to talk to him and just kind of pick his brain and see exactly where he was going. And there's similarities there, you know. Dante Wilder picked up the game late and has been trailing along slowly but surely. You know, hasn't convinced the world yet of what he can do, but...
No, well, it's early. I mean, I think people need to chill out with rushing him. You know, he doesn't have that many fights.
No.
And... So I think, you know, with Dominic, I mean, he's got three fights in, he's 27 years old. They really got to fight him like five times a year, you know, just flat out. He needs fights, and he doesn't need, you know, he's got, two second round knockouts and a first rounder. Okay, great. Now let's get him a little something more than that, you know, but they know their fighter, you know, getting him with a guy like Malik Scott, that's great experience.
It is.
I think
it is.
Like Wilder, his whole trip has been to just take sparring everywhere. Anytime somebody's fighting a Klitschko, they would send Deontay over there until the Watch fight. And I think Watch wanted him, and so did Klitschko. And they, you know, obviously they went, screw it, let's go with Klitschko. And they're not even really thinking about fighting Vladimir. It's just, let's get in with a great like that. Let's get that work like you're talking about. And you know, let's do something.
And I think that should be always the main focus and concentration for any management team to when they have a heavyweight. And really in the concern of a heavyweight, of trying to build a heavyweight, because if you look at the guys that are their heavyweights overseas, they're being built up properly. You know, they have an amateur, they have the amateur career backing them up, and they're doing most of their work in their home country. We kind of have to do that same type of development, you know, and that development is to send them with other heavyweights to work with, and even with the, you know, light heavyweights, get them used to learning to chase after a guy that's gonna, you know, use some footwork. Cut the ring off. You know, the one big thing when he mentioned Riddick Bowe was that was the most fascinating thing. Was this guy was a massive man that knew how to use his combinations. He knew how to fight in the inside, knew how to use the jab. He was an overall skilled heavyweight. And it's something that we haven't seen in quite some time, you know, where a guy really knows how to – well, Chris Neimer really knows how to mix it up, but – footwork is still was always in question with him, you know, and I made the comparison to Chris the Nightmare to Riddick Bowe, and they're in a lot of ways they're their worst enemy. They struggle with weight. The dedication is always questionable, but we haven't seen that with other heavyweights in terms of knowing how to put combinations together. Seth Mitchell was learning that, and I think that was the most, that's the one of the most reason why I was impressed by him. Was because he was able to put combinations, and he had the fundamentals of understanding that you can't just stick with a 1-2 and a 3. You had to mix them up. You had to give different angles, you know. But even with that said, and he was catching up to the game pretty quick in terms of learning, it was a bit rushed to see whether or not that learning curve was good enough to pass the bigger tests, the bigger quiz of boxing. And a lot of times these guys don't. They don't get past the second question in that ring when it comes to facing a veteran fighter.
That's true. You know, I think Yeah, it's just a process. You know, we'll see how it goes. I hope they don't rush it. I always think of like Kermit Cintron and Michael Grant is kind of.
Michael Grant was, you know, well, God, that
they had, mirror fights,
right?
You know, the it was a Teddy Reed fight with Kermit Cintron where he got cut. It was a rough fight. It took him a while to get the guy out of there, and then you know he got him out. I believe the eighth, but it was a tough fight, and then surgery, and then we'll go into the Margarito fight. It was just like what. You know, maybe they knew something that we didn't. They generally do in each camp, you know, whether they were cashing a guy out or they didn't think he'd last that long, so let's just get him to this fight or whatever. But then, you know, Michael Grant, it was the same thing. You know, they had him in there with Galata, and he gets folded like a chair. Remember, he got dropped
right
by Galata, and it was like, wait a minute. And then he got up, and he showed what you want to find out. He ended, you know, making Galata quit. And that says something about the guy. But what do they do? Next fight, Lennox Lewis. Let's just go right for the champ. Made no sense. You know, you got to have that fight where, okay, your guy gets kind of, you know, jacked up and knocked around. You know, Juanma Lopez versus Matagua. And then, you know, go a little easy on the guy for a minute. Let him regroup for a couple fights. Get his confidence back. Learn from that fight. And then you maybe go for the title. But damn, don't rush it. You know, I think with both these guys, it's, you know, Wilder needs to be reined in. You know, I don't think he's as good as he thinks he is. And even with his wins, I think his people might know that. I don't know if he does.
I don't think a fighter will ever admit, but I'm pretty sure there's got to be the doubt. The self-doubt's got to be there. For every fighter struggles with that self-doubt, you know. And I think that when a fighter doesn't want to admit, when we've interviewed fighters and I hear them go, well, this is what I think I need to do, and then they become realistic in the interview. They become a realist where they say, yeah, you know, I'm not there yet. I need maybe two or three more fights. That's when we kind of know, okay, they're not only studying what is out there in the division, but they're studying themselves, and they got to find and understand themselves. And I think that's the hardest thing that a lot of times that fighters it's difficult for them to find. Is to find out exactly, well, let me take that back. It's not hard for them to figure out what their flaw is, but it's three times harder to correct that flaw, you know? And I've seen that time and time again. I've seen fighters know, I've spoken to fighters in gyms and amateur fighters and sat through and had long conversations, and I will mention, you know, the smallest thing, and they'll be like, yeah, you know what, I know I do that, and I try to fix it, but for some reason, it just falls to be natural of making that same common mistake, and it just boils down to being repetitive and working that and working it and grinding it down so that you don't make those same mistakes. So when you hear a Seth Mitchell ask for an immediate rematch, there's got to be somebody that's not a yes ma'am. There's got to be a guy that steps in and goes, whoa, 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 slow your roll. Let's look at this bigger picture. Let's look at the past. I mean, that's why we have history there. It's to look at it and to learn from it. Michael Grant is a perfect example by you mentioning right now, Gabriel. That's a great example, and I think a lot of American heavyweights need to look at Michael Grant's, you know, career, where it was heading to, where it could have been, and how it fell apart so quick and so easy. Even Lennox Lewis, who was a commentary, you know, and is right, and on HBO, he said it true. You know, he's what you call hurry up and it come down quickly. They hear him up to get to the top, and he goes down fast to the bottom. It's there for you to follow. It's there written. I just don't see why managers don't see that bigger picture. There's a lot of pot of gold if you just built it and take your time and understand there's a process to get into that end of the rainbow.
Yeah, you know, we'll see how these guys go along their road, you know. Wilder, I just think they need to rein him in. They need to develop him this year and build him towards contendership. But he's not a contender right now. I don't know if he knows.
No. I think he's building his way to be a contender, which is the right way of doing. But I think to even put him in that definition of what a contender is, he's got some development, you know. And hopefully it's I honestly don't really think it of him being a contender maybe 2 years to 3 years out.
You know, same thing with Dominic. You know, we shouldn't really think of him as a threat until maybe 2 years from now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and to really look at it, these bigger guys really don't peak until they hit their 30s. You have a small selection of these heavyweights that hit their prime in their mid-20s, and that's the reason is because they've been an amateur fighter for a very long time, and they blew up a lot sooner in their age. You know, they developed a body of a heavyweight at an early age, and that's why they peaked. Where some heavyweights, they didn't develop that heavyweightness until they hit that 18 and plus of their lifespan. So I still say that there's no rush for it because they're not peaking. And in my eyes, like Seth Mitchell was not peaking at the moment. You know, he's not peaking at that moment. But if you continue matching him the way he is, there's not going to be a peak there to see anymore. You know, really quick, the weigh-in for Gennady Golovkin and Gabriel Rosado. Just saw a tweet from Dougie Fisher from Ring TV. I don't know if you had a chance to check that out, Gabriel. I retweeted it on our Twitter. But I wanted to mention, you know, Rosado's a tall guy. He's a really tall guy. But at the same time, man, Gennady, look at his size frame. There's a massive difference there. A massive difference there. I mean, no wonder why this guy's got some really short, compact power punches. I don't know if you want to take a look at that game and tell me what you think of the physique between these two fighters. They're going to be fighting on Saturday night, and then we'll roll into that fight schedule before we call Juan Carlos.
Let me check it out. I'm kind of surfing around looking for the fight photos and everything. You know, Golovkin's a guy that he's just always in shape. He's just always ready to go. He loves training. This is what he does. You know, right now it's just, I'm going to work and work and work and reap the benefits of it. I love how excited K2 is about him. I love how excited he is about his work. And Abel Sanchez just lights up whenever he talks about him. These guys are going to go far. I know it seems premature to a lot of people, you know, to be on the bandwagon. I've just been looking at him and liking what I've seen. You know, just a really hard-nosed, professional fighting middleweight. He punches through the target. He remembers to go to the body. He comes upstairs. I mean, you know, there was glaring weaknesses in a guy like I always look back to Trinidad as our my last favorite punch.
Right.
He didn't go to the body much. This guy remembers to go to the body. He fights like those, you know, it's like the Monzones or the Hagler type fighter that is just a professional beatdown.
Right. Well, to be fair to Tito too, he got in trouble every time he went to the body.
Yeah, he did. A little bit too low to the body. Well, that's it's probably because he didn't go to the body often enough.
Right. Right.
I'll always defend his
life. I was going to say, you know,
I'm a Trinidad.
I'm a Trinidad fan, man. You know, I've gotten into some heated arguments with people about Tito, and I think people forget that we're fight fans. We're not nationality fans. You know, I don't care where country you come from. If you're an exciting fighter, man, I'm going to root for you, and I'm going to be there, standing and applauding and tuning in or trying to get to see you as many times I can. You know, that's the difference between a hardcore fan from a national fan.
Oh, without question. I mean, I've never gone with my nationality. You know,
don't get me wrong. I love my nationality. You know, me and you are very proud Mexican Americans. You know, but when it comes to boxing, there is no color line there. In our opinion, there shouldn't be. It should be the love for the sport, not for the love for the nationality of the fighter. That to me doesn't do much. You know, it's the performance that does more for me, for us, that we get off on than just the color of your skin or your background or where you come from.
Oh yeah, I mean it just has never come into the equation for me. I've never been also, you know, as much as I'm proud of, you know, Mexico's history, I'm realistic about it. You know, I'm a Mexican American. I'm proud of what Mexican Americans have done in this country, without question. You know, I get incensed when we get jobbed. I get mad. You know, everybody goes crazy about Argo. I just can't get into it because the Ben Affleck character is a Mexican guy and he's a historical person. He existed. He's a Mexican guy.
Right.
And you got Ben Affleck in a bad beard and wig playing him. That shit pisses me off.
Right.
But when it comes to the squared ring, I'm partial to punchers. I'm really partial to boxer punchers. That's really the style that I like the most. And really, the way I would always describe Trinidad was more of a puncher boxer. He boxed just enough to get his punches, you know, his power in. And I think he was a puncher first and a boxer second, really.
Right.
He kind of boxed when he needed to, but Tito was just special. I enjoy that. I think he also kind of reminds me in that kind of upright style of Salvador Sanchez, who I don't necessarily think of as a puncher, but he was a guy that would get you out of there. He was just a straight up great.
They had almost the same intense look of what they were focused and what their mind was set to do. You know, they had the same.
Goes back to the Sugar Ray Robinson style, that kind of
right.
athletic puncher. Instead of being kind of low in the crouch and willing to take shots to come in, these guys were kind of trying to get you at that angle, like a sword fighter, like a fencer, you know, and slice in there with shots. I just, that's a style that I've always been partial to since I was a kid.
It's a beautiful, that's what, to me, that's the big plus of the Sweet Science there. It's
yeah.
really beautiful to watch. And when those punches are placed correctly, and you got to, you end up getting the sense of, okay, now I got it. Now I understand why they were, you know, dipping in or why they were setting up with this jab or... You get that more of a sense of what was in that little second of mind frame of what they were thinking of what they needed to get done to get the job, you know, completed. So that's the most fascinating thing there for me.
Absolutely. All right, I've got our fight schedule here. I mean, it's a nice weekend of fights. I think from top to bottom. It's got something for everybody. Friday's Barron, I'll give you that. Well, although you've got, you know, the Town Hall in Walsall, England. Frankie Gavin, I think this already happened, so it's 12:41 versus Jason Wellborn. I think actually Sweet Boxing is kind of tweeting this undercard as we speak. I've just been prepping for the radio, and I was writing someone's visa application letter, which is kind of interesting. January 19th, Saturday 2013, at the Madison Square Garden, New York City, New York, HBO. Orlando Salido, 39-11-2 versus Mikey Garcia, 30-0 for the WBO featherweight belt. Might as well break it down. I mean, this is what would you call Orlando Salido in terms of a fighter? I mean, I'm not sure it's fair to call him a brawler. It's like he's an intelligent brawler. He's got
that's his thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and I think
a looping right hand. He comes in. He goes to your body. He uses that jab and he just unloads with volume and pressure, intelligent pressure.
Well, see, you know, what I've liked of him and what we've seen of him, you know, is that's not the only gear that he has. If you watch when he got hurt with Juanma Lopez, he knew how to get away from the danger that was there for himself to recuperate. So it's not like a one gear type of mode, you know, where you've seen brawlers, they get hurt, they fall, and what they do is they try to get theirs back by just reverting to what got him in trouble in the beginning. With Orlando, he doesn't do that. It's almost like it's an off switch. I got hurt and got to regain myself, but I got to regain myself correctly, meaning that he almost puts up a mirage that he's being aggressive, but he's not. He's retracting and he's buying himself some time. That's an intelligent fighter. That's a guy that understands how to regain his momentum back, how to recoup and get himself gathered up so that he can go full-fledged again. So what I called him last night was an intelligent brawler. And I wasn't quite sure if Mike Garcia has ever faced anybody like that. You know, somebody that can apply pressure, but with the kind of pressure where they put the punches exactly where they need to be put at. And that's something Mikey's going to have to overcome. This is such an exciting fight. I've seen a lot of people just diss Orlando Salido, and that's not surprising to me because when the Juanma Lopez fight was first time announced, they just wrote him off on that fight there. This was an easy fight. This is going to be an easy fight for Juanma Lopez. And we all knew as viewers, real viewers, guys that really have followed these guys' careers, you know, especially with Orlando Salido, we knew that this was a real fight. Now leading into this Mikey Garcia, the same guys, the same people that have watched Orlando Salido, like myself and you, we know this is a real threat. This is a major threat. This may be the biggest jump for Mikey Garcia's career. It's a make him or break him, try to find out exactly where is Mikey Garcia in his career. And Salido definitely is going to tell us on Saturday night, where does he stand? And there's a strong possibility. And this is no diss to the people that are behind Mikey Garcia and say he's already a champion without even winning the belt yet. But you're not even configuring the factors here. You're not even putting the factors in line that what Salido brings to the table. This is a nail-biting fight, guys, a real nail-biting fight.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's Salido's really proved himself, you know. He took out Juanma Lopez twice. He's been also an active champion around that win. You know, he's been going at it and just staying busy, staying sharp. Mikey Garcia, I just wonder about him. You know,
I wonder about his pace.
It's his pace. Yeah, he takes so long to throw shots, and he doesn't really ever initiate action. And that's fine for his game, but with a guy like Salido, you know, is he going to have another gear? That's going to be, you know, against Matt Remillard, he had different gears. I think that was a really solid fight for Mikey. He's fighting another guy that was undefeated, that was going to throw punches and be aggressive. Both guys made a lot of adjustments in that fight, and I think that fight is kind of a key to this one. And not that Remillard is Orlando Salido, but he had kind of, you know, unusual angles or original angles that were hard to deal with and adjust to, just like Orlando Salido does. And he was a guy that came to win, really wanted to win, wanted to keep that undefeated record, didn't know how to lose, and Mikey had to teach him how to lose. That's, you know, that speaks a lot to the depth of Mikey's game, that maybe all these other guys just haven't really been able to give us that. I think that's perfectly fair. You know, Bernie B. Concepcion, I've never thought much of. You know, Rafael Guzman, you know, is another guy. I mean, he just kind of got him right out of there. All these guys, they're not Orlando Salido, and they're definitely not Matt Remillard in between. So I think it's almost like, you know, they kind of eased up. The Remillard fight was the tough fight. You know, all the rest of them were kind of, well, let's see, you know, just how well he can do with this guy. Even though we know he's going to win, and he's been exceptional. Now you really see what he's learned from the Remillard fight. And how he applied him in all those other fights. Now the sum total of that is taking on Orlando Salido. If Mikey Garcia is going to be that next level elite fighter, he's got to pass this test. If Salido is really having the late career surge we think he is, or did he run into the, you know, the right guys at the right times? Was Juanma kind of damaged goods, or you know, more like he was partying his goods off? Or, you know, and just how serious was he in the second fight? Was he able to really revive himself, you know?
Yeah, those
things are all going to play out right in this fight. We're going to find out reality in this fight.
And those are excellent points, because those are points that need to be raised and answered as well, too. Did he get Juanma Lopez at the tier of his career where it was falling apart due to his partying and his self-belief of getting out of any situation with a one-punch turn? Even a note out that Salido was hurt, and he was hurt because of his style, which is being aggressive and placing shots and creating openings, you know, by keeping his hands moving in order to get those sweet shots that he was looking for to hurt his opponent. So there is opportunities there that Salido is going to leave wide open for Mikey Garcia to execute. And that's the question, is by executing and getting him hurt, Mikey Garcia may have to either fall into that patient mode of allowing Orlando to recoup and get himself back into this fight, or jump on top of him, pick up that second gear, change into that third gear, and try to get him out of there. Because my thought of this fight is that if you allow him to recoup, he's going to make that adjustment, and now you're again trying to find his mistake when you already exposed the mistake and you should have capitalized on that mistake. So a lot. I mean, that fight's really good.
Yeah, I cannot wait to see it. What the heck was that sound? Something just fell in my room. Sorry. Let's get to the fight schedule as we continue on. Gennady Golovkin, Gabriel Rosado. Oh, my ultimate pick is Orlando Salido by late knockout, by the way. Gennady Golovkin versus Gabriel Rosado, 24-0 versus 21-5 for the WBA middleweight belt. A lot of people think this is kind of the showcase bout of the evening, and maybe it's going to be. I think Gabriel Rosado, he's a versatile guy. I think he can box and he can bang. Yeah, he's comfortable doing both of those things. And he understands that he has to do all those things in order to win. He's a guy that's learning on the job. You know, don't let the five losses fool you. He's actually a quality fighter, you know, who's had, you know, early losses and now late success. But Gennady Golovkin is he's the real deal in terms of, I mean, this is a blue chip prospect. Well, now he's a title holder, but this is a blue chipper right here. You know, a ton of amateur fights, an Olympic medal, and really as he's moved up in competition. You know, I think the Kasim Uma fight, a lot of people will point to that and say, well, he struggled in that fight. It took him a long time. But, you know, who's ever really looked great against Kasim Uma? Particularly lately. Kasim has been kind of rededicated. I thought he beat Vadas Martirosyan. It was a solid guy that he beat. I mean, what they were both doing in Panama, I have no idea for that
right
fight. But since then, I mean, he's gotten better and better. Proxa was, certainly top 20, maybe top 10, middleweight. I've seen him fight. He had quality wins. It avenged his only loss. And he got blown out of there by Gennady Golovkin. I think this guy's just next level, and we're going to find that out once again when he knocks out Rosado in six.
This fight is really – Gennady's just got to be Gennady. It really falls for what Gabriel Rosado has been learning and what kind of plan he's been drawing up. In my opinion, for a result of the win this fight, it really depends on what he's been doing in camp and how focused and how he can stay focused when that bell rings. Because Gennady, I don't think, is going to change anything. He's going to be himself, and there's no need to change anything. He's the guy that's coming in that's got the power. He's the bigger frame fighter. Where Rosado's got to jump up and wait, you know, and. I've always said, you know, gaining a little bit more weight is a little harder than shedding weight, because you're gaining weight. That means you got to put up mass. And we don't know how he put that mass up. You know, walk around weight and fighting weight is completely different. You know, walk around weight, you got fat. To be fighting weight, you got to put some muscle behind there, and you got to put it up properly. So there can be something there that can lack, and whatever can lack without having a tune-up fight or you know, something to lead into the Gennady fight, you're going to end up finding out how your body is going to react on fight night. And that's the only concern I have. So everything's up against Rosado. He's got a lot of questions for himself alone to answer on Saturday night, where Gennady doesn't have to answer nothing except for just being himself.
Yeah, I think there should be no pressure on Golovkin. I think he should just let everything come to him in the fight, and it'll be just fine. All the pressure really is on Rosado to make a good showing, to win the biggest fight of his life, to change his life.
That's a lot, too, man. I was thinking about that last night, and I was like, wow, that is a lot to have on your shoulders, you know.
You gave up your title shot at 154. I guarantee you in the third round, this is kind of jacked up to say, he's going to be thinking about that after he's already been down once early. And he's had to go to plan B.
I don't think he goes. I got to respectfully disagree with you. I don't think he gets dropped early.
Oh, I think he does. I think just in terms of just finishing the thought, I mean, I think it's all that pressure is going to come crashing down on Rosado, who's, I'm not saying he's a bad fighter at all, but all the pressure's on him. And I think Golovkin knows he's just there to shine. And he's a patient guy. The way he fights, all that kind of plays into his strengths, you know, what Rosado has to do. Now, I think Rosado gets caught, like, the third round.
I'd say if he gets caught, it's going to be within the fifth or sixth round. I think what Rosado's going to bring in the beginning of those first – I think Rosado's going to – he's going to look good for those first couple of rounds. He's going to impress. He's going to surprise a few guys. Not going to surprise Gennady, though. I don't think he's going to surprise Gennady. I think Gennady expects, Rosado to box and move and try to stay away. He even said it, you know. I expect him to try to make this fight go the long distance. And that's why I say I don't see him landing that perfect shot, that heavy shot on Gabriel that soon. I think it leads into a fifth or sixth round where he gets caught, gets dropped, because the pressure. Well, there's only so much you can run from a guy that's going to keep coming and coming and coming, you know?
So I'm picking a six-round knockout, so that's why it's got to happen to the third. It happens to the third, and then in the sixth, that's when it happens again, and it's over.
Oh, man. If I have to pick, and my pick would be, I believe Gennady's going to stop him, but I'm going to have to go for the later rounds. I think that Rosado decides to stand and trade, decides to test the water with the bigger shark, and then finds out the bite's a little harder than what he thought, and that would be his that's going to be his major mistake in that fight is to be dare to be brave, not great, but dare to be brave.
I think daring to be brave could be his undoing. I think he just dared to be boring. Dare to be conservative, and you know, if Gennady Golovkin has as slow as feet as people say he does, and is simple and can be outboxed, and nobody sees anything special, somebody should just slowly, methodically outbox him. Then, you know, do what Hopkins did. Hopkins dared to be boring. That fight had tension and drama because you were expecting something to happen, and then you know when Tito kind of unloaded late, I thought it was exciting, but when you watch it again, it's a cold clinic.
Right.
Talk about Hopkins. Trinidad, you know, Hopkins dared to be unexciting, but be precise and execute his game plan.
Well, there's two ways of doing it. The Hopkins way, which was, and I think with going with the earliest of us remembering somebody surviving and taking somebody out of their game plan that applies a lot of pressure, is when James Kirtland fought Carlos Molina. Molina reverted down to the grappling style. You know, take away their best tool, which is the aggression, by holding them and trying to maul them up. I don't see that with Rosado trying to do, but I wouldn't blame him if that's one of the game plans, is to smother Gennady's shots and try to hold on to him and drag him out to those later rounds to frustrate him.
Particularly if you're looking at the Uma fight, yeah, you know that did kind of bother him getting in close. I think he understands range better now, though.
Right.
I think he understands who he's got to be, and I also think he understands how to be in each of the different ranges, long, you know, and medium and short. I think he's learned how to really. You saw that in the Proxa fight. I mean, he kind of caught him with some tight shots. I just think it's gonna be a good fight, though.
It's gonna be
regardless.
Good.
I could see several scenarios playing out. That's just the one I've always thought of. Then we got Rocky Martinez, 26-1-1 versus Juan Carlos Burgos, or it's Ramon Rocky Martinez, and that rounds out this triple header for the WBO Junior Lightweight belt.
Good, you know, this triple header, man, is something to talk about. We just hope that all fights are going to be stellar. When I talk to fight fans and we get them on our Gmails and they email us and they ask, you know, what do you think about this fight? And a lot of them are, you know, a lot of folks are, why are so many people excited about Ramon Rocky Martinez? And my only answer to that is because this guy's always at the brink of losing the fight, and somewhere, somehow, he's always been able to come up on top. He's an exciting guy. He's not the most polished guy in the world, and I almost threw him out as my last conversation last night with a fight fan was that I said that he's like a poor man version of Arturo Gatti. You know, he gets hit a lot, but he always kind of finds a way of getting himself out of that mess. You know, he loses concentration. He ends up losing the stamina. He falls apart. He's got really wide, loopy shots. He slaps his punches, but he's able to make it exciting. That's why I call him the poor man Arturo Gatti, where Gatti was more precise and he had the power to back him to get him out of situations. Martinez is not like that, but he has that more of a Rocky feel, character of what he portrays on the screen and in the ring. And I think that's what makes him exciting. But when it goes to Juan Carlos, here's a guy that lost to Hasegawa, and Martinez is nothing. There's no comparisons there to what Hasegawa was. And I'd like the more refined tools of Juan Carlos. And just to note it really quick, I thought that Martinez lost his last fight, you know, with Beltran, what was the cousin of Raul Beltran. And I just think that Martinez is as lucky as he's been, that he's got through his fights, I think the luck has finally, it's going to finally run out when he gets in embargoes.
Yeah, geez, you ever just get barraged by messages? Like, the middle of the day is hard, really hard for me to do this show just because of, it's like, my emails and my phone are, like, blowing up. Sorry, I got a little distracted. Though this fight, you're exactly right on point about Ramon Martinez. Like, his fight with Ricky Burns, one of my favorite fights ever. It's just...
That was a great fight.
Yeah, just a seesaw battle, just pure excitement. He's an underrated guy, Martinez, in that. You know, it's like, I don't know if he's going to be a real champion. I mean, he picked up a vacant belt, you know, but...
He's a conceited.
But he's just always exciting. Yeah, and Burgos is the same kind of guy. He's a young guy. He's got, 20 knockouts in 31 fights. He's only got one loss. Never been stopped. And he lost to, a quality guy in Izumi Hasegawa. Hasegawa was, long a featherweight champion, and just one of my favorite fighters as well. You know, in a dangerous style, power puncher, southpaw. He learned from that fight. He hasn't lost since. He's won 5 in a row. Hasn't been crazy active. You know, 3 times in 2011 and twice in 2012. But the wins have been quality. He's well connected. He's only 25 years old. And the last fight, against Cesar Vasquez, knocks him out in 3 rounds, and Vasquez, undefeated fighter, I thought it was a quality win. I like Burgos in this fight. I think he's, you just look at him for the weight class and everything. He's 5'8", almost 5'9", really, probably at this point. He's still growing. He's got a long reach, 68.5. To me, while Martinez matches up with him in terms of size and reach, he's 5'8", 67-inch reach. It's his durability I always worry about. Like you said, there's always kind of some problem, whether it's his stamina or, he gets kind of rocked by taking too many shots. I think he sticks around for the receipt way too much.
Way too much.
I think Burgos is becoming, a smarter fighter each time he goes out there. He can be hit and he can be outclassed, but I don't think that Martinez is who Hasegawa was when he beat Burgos, if that makes sense. So I really like Burgos to win this one. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a late stoppage, but I think it goes to decision.
It's almost leading to something like that with Rocky Martinez. You never know exactly if he's going to be fully conditioned. You just don't know with him. He's a really kind of a seesaw character in terms of his fighting style in the ring, and I think that's what makes him intriguing and where we want to watch him. That's why I like to watch him. He's always up and down. You just don't know what you're going to get from Martinez. And let's give Carlos a call right now and see if we can get him on. I'm not sure yet if they're ready for us, but we're going to give it a shot anyways, and hopefully we can get him on and we can speak to him here on Leaving the Ring. We're going to call his trainer Marcos first, and then we'll move on to there. If you want to continue with our fight schedule, so just in case, Gabriel, we certainly can, because we do got some good exciting fights on NBC Sports as well.
You got it. I'm actually just pulling up. I sat down with Juan Carlos Burgos after he won his title, and we sat at downtown for probably like 30 minutes, 40 minutes, me, Doug Fisher, him, a couple other writers. It was just fantastic. It was really kind of just me and Dougie after a while. And he's a really interesting guy, pretty funny guy. I'm excited to have him on. I'm not sure if we've even had him on the show yet.
No, I don't. We've never had him on. I've tried to have him on. I remember when he was going to fight Hasegawa, I tried to get him on, but it was hard because he was down over there in Japan, so we didn't have that opportunity to speak to him. And this time around, we do. And I know that they're in the weigh-in and they had to do some paperwork.
Please leave your name and number, and I'll return.
Okay, so we'll call them back. We'll give them another 10 minutes because when I spoke to them around 10:30, he let me know. We don't have a problem doing it. We just got the weigh-in and we have to sign this paperwork, so it might be a little crazy, here and there to get them on, to squeeze them on. So anyways, let's go with that fight schedule. Let's continue on with that fight schedule. And fight fans, if you want to call in and talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring, it's probably throwing everybody off because we're doing the Nooner. I don't think a lot of people thought we were going to do a Friday show, but we kept our promise. 347
215-75-9898 here on Leaving the Ring. This is a Nooner show. We had Dominic Brazil with us, the heavyweight Olympian, come on the show. And we're doing our fight take here, our prediction, our breakdown, our fight schedule. And we're going to be having Juan Carlos Bargos with us on Leaving the Ring in a short bit. But we're going to continue on in our fight schedule. So go ahead, Gabriel.
All right. The Mohegan Sun Casino in Uncasville, Connecticut, on NBC Sports. Gabriel Campillo, 21-4-1 versus Sergey Kovalev, 19-0-1 for the Ring Magazine, whatever. Curtis Stevens, 22-3 versus Elvin Ayala, 36-5-1. Whatever. Well, you know, I'm trying to decide what belts I want to recognize, and I think, you know, the alpha belts, they should be at least named, because, I mean, it does matter to the fighter. The ring belt, I don't really care if it matters to the fighter, because I don't think the fighter stops to think about the fact that a promoter, like, owns that belt, and they're moving around rankings, and, like, you know, I don't usually care about pound for pound, but when you see Adrian Broner move to number 5, you just got to think, like, what the hell, you know? It's hard to delineate. I'm just going to go on a rant, but we've got time. We've got like another hour. We're doing the show. Like Doug Fisher is a guy I hold in high esteem. He's the editor-in-chief over there at the online division. I respect the hell out of Doug. I have respect for Mike Rosenthal. I don't always read his writing. I always read Doug's. But Mike strikes me as an intelligent guy. And I've sat, you know, to lunch with him, like just when we were interviewing Gennady Golovkin, and we were talking about how, you know, Salido versus Garcia is for the 1 and the 3 in order to get the ring belt. And I didn't want to be rude to them and say, you know, I think it's silly that people are arguing about it because you guys are owned by a promoter and, you know, they already know my position on this. You know, I'm pretty vocal about it. Doug and I have talked about it. But you do have to kind of go through the roster and, like, qualify people when you say that, because I'm not saying Doug's a shill. I think that would be a terrible thing to say that about Doug and Mike. You know, that they're shills and they do what Schaefer says. I think the rankings are kind of funky, and I think the pound-for-pound thing kind of shows a bias. I just think they're owned by Golden Boy, and it does feel like that they're kind of influenced. Not Doug and not Mike, but the publication seems influenced by that promoter. And so I just don't – that's why I just say, well, whatever, because I don't really listen to their rankings. I don't consider them official, and I don't know why people do. It doesn't make any sense to me. The ratings themselves, even in the sanctioning bodies, don't make any sense. So why is this one that's a bunch of opinions of a bunch of writers, some of whom don't even really cover the beat, some of whom I don't read, some of whom I do read and don't respect, and some I hold in great esteem. It's a collection of their opinions that make up these ratings. And then on top of that, I mean, at least the pound for pound looks like it can be influenced. I mean, Chuck Ciampa wasn't a good judge when he was a judge. Now
right.
He's running their pound for pound. Why should I give a shit? Why should I treat it as official? Now, the WBO, WBA, and, you know, all the other two alpha belts, the BC and the IBF, those actually increase the money and opportunity of the fighters. They actually do something positive for these guys. I know sometimes the rankings are just straight up kooky. That's why I don't get that concerned with them, because this is a political sport. It's really a business and not a sport. So the rankings, once you get to like in the top 10, don't really matter all that much who's the 10 and who's the 1, because, you know, people are going to get their shots depending on how well they're managed. That's just the way it is. Sorry, that's the reality of the thing. So I want to just clarify, I'm not being flippant for no reason. There's actually a thought process behind it. But this fight, Gabriel Campillo, 21-4-1 versus Sergey Kovalev, 19-0-1. Talk about a real fight, dude.
Right.
Kovalev's the house guy, and Campillo's the guy that always gets robbed but seems to win. Like, you can make an argument that dude is undefeated.
Yeah.
But I just in terms of skills, I like Campillo's style. I think he's got the straighter punches. He's coming from a favorable angle to where Kovalev keeps his hands down low. He brings them back kind of low, and he's not the quickest of foot or hand. I think he's got real power, and Campillo doesn't. He's only got 8 knockouts. But you know, and Kovalev's got, you know, 17 out of 19 wins, 1 draw. But you know, Campillo being a southpaw, I don't think his age factors into it because the guy seems to be in always great shape. He never seems to tire. He can throw a lot of punches.
And he can adjust. That's the one thing I like about Campillo.
Yeah.
He really knows how to adjust in his fights. He knows how to set him up. He's an overall polished fighter.
Yeah, exactly. He's more, I hate to say, sorry, I'm coughing. I'm kind of fighting the beginnings of yet another cold, and I don't know what the hell's going on. I think it's just crazy L.A. weather. Campillo, you know, he's a southpaw. He's tall. He's 6'2 for the weight. He matches up well with Kovalev, who's 6 foot, but you know, he's a little shorter. But he's an orthodox fighter, but I think, you know, he's also the older – he's an older guy at 29, so no spring chicken himself. He's probably got a lot of miles on him as an amateur. And Campillo, like I said, he always stays in shape. And he only fought once in 2012, so there's not a lot of wear and tear on him. He got robbed and just kind of went home. I don't really know what they were thinking. I think he got an injury after that. He had to pull out of a fight, shoulder injury. And so now here he is, healthy and ready to go. I just think the way his punches go, they're nice and straight. He minds his defense. They come back. He's got high guard that protects him. He's got good wheels. He knows how to turn on angles and make you pay and counter. Kovalev, he's got nice pressure. He's gonna crowd. He's going to come in and throw, you know, heavy shots, but they're slower. At times they're kind of wider, they're a little bit telegraphed, and when they come back low. Campillo can make him miss and make him pay or block and hit. I like the Chico Guapo, the handsome man.
The thing is with Campillo is if you look at the styles of fighters that he has faced, they've been pressure guys. They've been guys that come forward, that try to out-muscle him, push him back, and this is just to me. There's a lot of similarities here, you know. It really falls on Campillo. Did he heal correctly? Did this layoff do more damage than good for him? And where does he stand getting in himself of what he wants to do and move forward? He's been robbed, and even when he's fought off of these losses. And he gets back in the ring, he almost continues to you could kind of see it that he believes and he knows, I didn't lose these fights, so I'm not going to fight like a fighter that has lost. I'm going to fight like a fighter that's won continuously.
Yeah, I think so. You know, and this is, you know, he's an intelligent guy, and I think my hope with him is that he doesn't fight completely out of character. And in hopes of trying to get that decision, he's going to have to fight with more urgency, Campillo, you know, to get that decision. But I don't want him to fight like he's a knockout guy and then end up getting knocked out himself. You know, it's going to be an interesting fight because he is going to have to risk a little bit. He's not the house fighter here. He's going to have to take some chances in order to get that win. We'll see.
I'm going to go with him. I think Campillo is going to just do what he normally does. He's going to counter. He's going to open up when he needs to open up, and then he's going to move. We've seen him do that, you know, multiple times, you know, where he and even when he makes the mistake of staying in that pocket a little too long and he gets caught with some pretty good shots, you normally don't get to see him do that like two more times. He kind of learns from that first mistake. I overall like him a lot. I think that he's a very underrated fighter. Not a lot of fans know a lot about him. And seeing that he's going to be on NBC Sports, you know, the people that haven't had a chance to witness his style of fighting, I think they're going to be impressed. And overall, I think he'll be back again, and he should be the victor in this fight.
Yeah, I think so. I'm taking Campillo by decision. I think even despite Kovalev being the house fighter, this would be terrible to see yet another bad decision, you know, under this banner on this network. They really can't afford it. It would be really ugly. Curtis Stevens, 22-3 versus Elvin Ayala, 36-5-1. I think Curtis Stevens, despite the losses, is...
No, Curtis is just...
I'll take Curtis in this one.
Curtis has always fallen short, man. It's like, you know, he's got the physique of a fighter. He just doesn't – I just don't think he has the heart to do it anymore, you know. Especially with that Jesse Brinkley. He was outboxed. He was, you know, outmatched. And that's the end of the story with that one there. what is more to say about that? We're trying to give J.C. Margulis again another shot here. Hopefully they'll answer.
Please leave your name and number.
Okay.
He's fired.
Let me give him another ring real quick because I might not recognize the number.
At the convention center in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Matt Vanda, 44.
Please 14. Leave your name and number, and I'll return your call.
Versus Caleb Truax, 21-1. They're not fighting for a belt. I'm going to take Caleb Truax by decision in that one. And at the Centro de Convenciones in Mexico, Sergio Thompson, 25-2, versus Moises Castro, 29-19-4. Little known fact, I once played a character named Moises. I'm going to take Sergio Thompson by knockout, yeah.
It's good to see Sergio go back in the ring, you know? He hasn't heard from him, so it's nice to get that. Televised. I don't think it is.
It's like the curse of beating Linares, you know, like nothing happens with your career.
And he, after beating Linares, he thought mostly that he was going to get back. He thought he was going to get a shot at DeMarcus, remember that? And nothing came out of that. He just got shelved up and put away.
Yep.
2013.
Please leave your name and number and I'll return.
Ivan Morales, 19-0 versus Patricio Camacho, 16-7-1. Yeah, I'm going with Ivan Morales. And that rounds out your weekend fight schedule.
I'm going to text him and see if he's ready for us. And if not, well, we're going to probably be calling it short today because we're almost at the end of discussing anything else that we need to here on Leaving the Ring. You know, going real back with Curtis Stevens, you know, just really quick, because I know his camp, and if they're listening, and I just hope that they don't get mad. You know, it's just, I think that whatever he had, whatever incentive that he had in the beginning, it's just gone and passed. And sometimes that's the cold reality. Is that an undercard really that you wanted to see be put on that bill for the NBC Sports? If you're trying to intrigue new viewers and stuff and try to bring them into the sport, I thought as an opening, I just don't think that would have been the fight that I would have put for the opening of the NBC Sports.
Well, it's just dangerous. These Max Boxing pop-ups are killing me. Yeah, I mean, it's just dangerous because of Campeo's history. But, you know, it's good. I mean, maybe we can wipe it away and end up...
fight is dangerous.
You know, finally getting a win, you know. Millionth time is a charm. We'll see, you know.
I think
it's a good fight, though. Kovalev versus Campeo is an action fight. It's a fun fight. It's a nice mixture of styles. You know, you've got your classic boxer who also is a southpaw, but who's not unaggressive against a come-forward pressure power puncher. It should be fun. You know, if Kovalev is the real deal, you know, then he knocks out Campeo and he gets or knocks him down, tames him, and wins a decision. We'll see.
Yeah. I wasn't saying that was a bad fight. I'm thinking of the opening, you know, the undercard with Curtis Stevens and Evan Ayala. I just don't know if I would have put that to if you're going to try to draw more fans and more lists. I mean, more viewers.
Sure. If I just lost Dave, I think he might have disappeared looking for Juan Carlos Burgos.
Can you hear me? Hello. Hello. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Hello, can you hear me? Gabriel. Hello.
Gabriel, can you hear me? I don't know what happened.
Gable, can you hear me? I should be on. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what happened here. I'm going to call back Gabriel, but it seems like I lost my voice on here. So we'll get him back on right now. And then we're going to be trying J.C. Vargas here back on the radio show. Gabriel, are you there? Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can. I don't know what happened, but I was saying about the undercard of Curtis saying that I don't know if I would have put that as the opening for NBC Sports if I was trying to draw new fans and new viewers and stuff. The headline absolutely is a great fight. I think that's going to draw fans. Hopefully newbies that are tuning into NBC Sports, they're going to stick around to see the main event and not be shushed away by Stephen Curtis.
Yeah. Yeah, it's you're right. Well, we'll see. You know, Elvin Ayala is a guy. He's a journeyman that always kind of brings it. I've seen him live, I think, you know, once, but he does come forward. He does bring it, and so I think Curtis Stevens is an aggressive guy. I think the fun with him is he can be gotten or he can get you. So we'll see. We'll see in this one how that works out.
Right. Okay, I'm gonna try JC one more time. And hopefully we can get him, because we're almost running out of time here on Leaving in the Ring. And this was a long shot to get him on anyways, because of the fact that he was doing his weigh-in. And if you've never been at a weigh-in, it could just drag. It's never at that scheduled time where it's supposed to happen. So there's
Please
always...
Leave your name and number, and I'll return your call.
There's always a major delay. So, let's see if I can get him on. Hopefully we can get JC on. They're all done. But we're crossing our fingers here on Leaving the Ring. Really wanted to talk to him today, too, about his exciting fight with Ramon Rocky Martinez, which is happening tomorrow night on that triple header. We had Gennady and we had Rosado on our show, on our past guest shows, here on Leaving the Ring. So if you missed those interviews, you can find them in the archives at the leavingtheringradio.com site. Also, too, that it's not an automatic. Hello, this is Dave Weston. Gabriel, how you doing, brother?
Hey, Gabriel. How's it going, man?
Good. Hey, listen, is JC ready or is he still trying to get
things? No, he's ready.
Okay, now, let me ask you, Marcos, could you be our translator?
Yes, no problem.
Beautiful.
Let me put you on speaker. Hold on.
Great.
Let me get comfortable, man. Let me get the jacket off.
Oh.
Hold on. Yeah, we're
How you doing,
coming
Mark?
From
What's
the outside. It's super cold. Happy New Year, man. Hold on. Bueno.
Fight fans, right now, they got a hold of JC, and we're going to be interviewing him. Who's going to be our interpreter is Marcos, and we should be able to get our questions answered from him. So... Excited! Really excited about having him on, man. It's been a minute. I've been wanting to speak to him. Like I said, trying to get him on when he was going to face Hasegawa in Japan, but didn't have that opportunity. But now we do.
Okay, he's ready now.
First off, just thank you for taking the time to speak to us here on Leaving the Ring. I know it's atrocious when you do the weigh-in. The first thing on your mind is to try to rebellish your body.
I'm hearing you.
Hear me?
Okay. Yes. Can you hear me? Okay. Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Okay.
So I said, just tell him, I said, thank you for taking the time to speak to us. I know after the weigh-in, the first thing that's on a fighter's mind is to, rebellish their body, get some food in them. So thank you again for coming on.
Okay. Dice que te da las gracias por tomar la llamada, que dice que él entiende que ahorita después del pesaje, lo primero que tiene Realmente el peleador es hidratarse y comer y para estar bien de peso.
Oh, al contrario, gracias a ustedes por el tiempo y la atención que me están dando. Gracias.
He's saying that thank you for the time you're putting into to talk to him, and he's very grateful for this call.
I'm going to pass it over to my co-host first, Gabriel. Go ahead, Gabriel.
Thank you, Juan Carlos, for joining us this afternoon. We'll try to get through this. I know you want to start eating and everything after the weigh-in. Let's just start at the beginning for people that don't know much about you. First off, your nickname is Mini Burgos. Can you tell us your beginnings in boxing and where you get the nickname Mini?
Dice que para las personas que todavía no han oído mucho de ti, tu sobrenombre de Mini Burgos, ¿de dónde viene y cómo fue que se originó y desde cuándo empezaste el boxeo?
Bueno, empecé a boxear desde los 9 años. Mi primera pelea fue a los 11, amateur. Y mi apodo me lo pusieron desde chiquito, ya que era una persona de baja estatura, pero mi actual entrenador, Roberto Nadal, fue el que me puso unos ejercicios para crecer, pero desde chico, desde entonces, se me quedó el apodo de Mini Burgos y toda la gente me conoce así.
He said that he started boxing when he was 9 years old, in his first amateur fight when he was 11. The reason they start calling him Mini Burgos is because when he was a young kid, he was very short. But his trainer, Roberto Sandoval, gave him that nickname, but Roberto put him some exercise so he, you know, can grow up more, and that's how it started everything. I mean, the nickname Mini Burgos because he was so small, but now, you know, he grew up a lot.
What is it about? I mean, we had talked before, and you talked about how your family. You come from an entire family of boxers, and I think including your mom was a boxer. I think your sister was a boxer. Can he talk about what fighting means to him and his family?
Dice que viene de familia de boxeadores, que tiene entendido que tu mamá y tu hermana fueron boxeadores, y que ¿cuál es el significado tuyo?
Bueno, creo que eso es algo importante para mí, ya que pues ahora sí. Por mis venas corre sangre de boxeador y creo que Dios me dio muchas cualidades y para este deporte y creo que la estoy aprovechando muy bien.
He's saying that he's coming from a boxing family. His father was a boxer. His uncle was a boxer. He was in 2003 he became the world champion. He said that God gave him a lot of gifts. One of this is as a boxer, and he really likes boxing and he enjoys boxing.
What does he see with Rocky Martinez? I mean, here's a guy that's kind of a seesaw in his career. You know, he's always looks like he's in the brink of losing the fight, and he's always ended up coming up on top. What does he see about him that he could take advantage where other guys couldn't?
Dice que quedes en el estilo de pelea de Rocky Martínez, que normalmente empieza perdiendo las peleas y luego sobresale y gana. ¿Cuáles son las ventajas que tú le ves en tu tipo de boxeo como es Rocky Martínez?
Bueno, anteriormente, como lo acabas de mencionar, es un peleador que empieza perdiendo las peleas y al último la gana, pero bueno, conmigo va a ser diferente. Voy a hacer un plan de pelea y lo voy a envolver en mi pelea y creo que conmigo va a perder desde el primer round hasta el último. Es que llega la decisión y si no, pues vamos a buscar el knockout.
He's saying that, yeah, of course, like you said, Rocky Martinez, like you said, he started losing the fight since the beginning, but with Burgos, it's going to be different. He's going to start losing since the beginning, and if he goes to the decision, he's going to lose all the rounds, but if he gets the opportunity, he will knock him out.
When his last fight, which was with Beltran, a lot of folks, including myself, thought that the kid from Mexico won that fight. But the major mistake that Beltran did was allow Rocky to do a lot of slap punching, which I consider there weren't punches that were turned over. There were more slap punches to kind of land on him, and I think that's what lost his momentum of winning that fight. What does he think about Beltran's tactic of how he went into that fight?
Dice que para muchos de los que vieron la pelea de Beltrán Martínez, que Beltrán pues iba y para él iba ganando la pelea, pero que ese Rocky empezó como a cachetearlo y fue acumulando puntos. Y ¿qué piensas de eso?
Pues nada, yo no pienso en nada. simplemente yo voy a hacer mi pelea. Ahora a mí me toca enfrentar a Martínez y mi trabajo es ganarle. Yo no estoy viendo en el pasado, estoy viendo el presente y mi intento es ganarle a Martínez y llevarme el título para México. Eso es lo que me importa.
He's saying that he doesn't think in the past whatever happens to Martínez and Beltrán, it does in the past. He's not looking in the past or how he fought against Beltrán. What he's looking is to beat Martínez and get that title back to Tijuana, Mexico.
Your last loss was in 2010 against Izumi Hasegawa. Since then, you've won 5 in a row. You've become a champion. You picked up the WBC silver super featherweight belt and the Latino super featherweight belt for the WBO. What changed after that fight?
Después de que perdiste tu posición con Hasegawa, has estado invicto en 5 peleas al hilo. Y después de haber ganado el cinto de la WBC plata y el del WBO latino, ¿qué te ha beneficiado a ti en este tiempo? ¿Cómo estás ahorita tú?
Bueno, aprendí mucho después de esa derrota, pero lo que más aprendí es que no me tengo que confiar, me tengo que preparar siempre al 100% para cualquier rival, y Martínez es un gran peleador y me he preparado lo mejor posible que puede para esta pelea y ganar.
He's saying that he learned a lot from that loss in Japan, and Martínez, he's saying that Martínez is a great boxer, a great champion, but he's well prepared. He trained very hard for this fight, and he's ready to go to war on Saturday night, and he's ready to take that title away from Martínez.
In so many ways, being on HBO, which is a major big stage for him, does he need to make sure that he brings something a little bit more different so that he continues to be in the faces of fight fans on HBO?
Sabiendo que HBO es una gran cadena y pesa mucho en el boxeo, ¿tú crees que tienes que hacer algo diferente para que sigas en la mira de HBO para seguir a ese nivel?
Sí, creo que sí. Tengo que salir a ganar, dar un buen espectáculo, ¿no? Una buena pelea. Que sea del agrado de la televisión para que me siga incluyendo en carteleras grandes y que siga transmitiendo mis peleas. Y lo único que tengo que salir a hacer es salir a ganar y convencer a la televisión para que me siga incluyendo en las funciones grandes.
Absolutely. He said that of course, to fight for HBO, it's a lot of responsibility that he's gonna, he knows that he gotta put a great show, great performance. HBO be happy with his performance and continue broadcasting his fights.
Is it significant that this is his, every Mexican fighter, every guy that becomes a champion in Mexico, they have to fight that great Puerto Rican fighter in order to kind of, it's like a test. Is that what this fight represents to him? Is that something that's still important to Mexican fighters, is the Puerto Rican-Mexico rivalry?
¿Tú crees que habiendo la rivalidad México-Estados, México-Puerto Rico, que cada vez que un mexicano o se convierte en campeón o viceversa, que tienen que enfrentar a un puertorriqueño para como una prueba más de defender el título y rivalidad? ¿Qué piensas de eso?
Bueno, ya es una vieja rivalidad desde hace muchos años entre México y Puerto Rico y han sido... Bueno, y grandes peleas entre mexicanos y puertorriqueños, y la mía con Martínez no va a ser la excepción. Estoy listo para dar una gran pelea, llevarme el título para México. Y pues creo que cuando un mexicano y un puertorriqueño se enfrentan, son grandes peleas, y mi pelea con Martínez no va a ser la excepción.
Absolutely. I mean, the rivalry there is between Mexico and Puerto Rico. This always, it's been history with boxers that are from Puerto Rico and Mexico that are putting great show, and his fight is not going to be the exception. Of course, he knows that it's a great fight, and he's going to put a great performance, great show for all the fans and all the people that are going to see the fight.
We don't want to take any more of his time. We want him to go eat and rest. We look forward for this fight, and thank you again for coming on Leaving the Ring and talking to us. JC, we got to do this really soon, man. I wish you all the luck.
Sabes que te agradece mucho que el tiempo que tú tomaste, ya sabes que estás estás recuperando en tu peso y que agradece mucho el haber llamado, que hayas tomado la llamada.
No, al contrario, que gracias a Dios por la atención y por regalarme un poco de su valioso tiempo.
No, of course, he's, thank you for everything and for the this small space that you allow him to have over your interview. And he wants to say hi to everybody, and he's ready. He's going to be prepared for Saturday night. He's going to put a great show.
Marcos, too, thank you very much, man, for taking the time and allowing us to do this interview and being our interpreter for the show today, man. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
No, thank you, and thank you for having the time to call us and so you can talk to Juan Carlos. Thank you very much.
All right, man.
It'd be awesome. Good luck to you guys. Thank you.
Very much. Bye.
Juan Carlos. Bargos, Mini Bargos here on Leaving in the Ring, and love this interview. You could tell it's harsh. You know, right when they get out of that weigh-in, you could really hear it. They're exhausted. They just want to get, you know, back to their hotel room and just feast, you know? And so that's why we made this interview a little short. You know, I had a little bit more questions, but I figured, you know what? We're torching this guy enough.
Seriously, he was like, tell me about your childhood. Dude, I need a steak.
Yeah, Lip has started off with, I need a steak right now. You know, I worked my ass to get to this point to get a steak, okay? Yeah. Anyways, fight fans, we promised to do a Nooner show, and we came through, and we had Dominic Brazil on, the heavyweight prospect with us here on Leaving the Ring. And then we have JC Mini Bargos with us, who's going to be fighting Saturday night with Rocky Martinez, Ramon Rocky Martinez, Mexican and Puerto Rican rivalry. His story, there's a lot of history behind that. We appreciate everybody that tuned in and supports Leaving the Ring Radio. And like always, I have a great time doing this. We apologize from yesterday's show, but we came back, and we came back strong like we said we would, man.
Yeah, I can't. It was fun. The Nooners are kind of you got to knock one out every once in a while, you know.
Yeah, we haven't done the Nooner. I mean, we haven't done early shows in a long time. We used to do them like 2 years ago, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. I don't know. We've been doing this for quite some time now. We've been putting in the work on this radio show for quite some time. So, but like always, brother, hey, go eat. I'm gonna go eat because it's way past our lunchtime, and I'll talk to you soon. Everybody, don't drink and drive. Enjoy your Friday night.
Yeah. All right, man. Peace.